But to begin, what are the things that you consider to be retro in your home? Could it be your original lava lamp, maybe your 70s patterns wallpaper, or maybe you have a collection of birds or other things dating from the 60s that decorate the wall, or even a 1950s style fridge? Whether it's original or a replica, retro is a broad concept. But when does something old or even old-fashioned become a desirable retro item for your home? So to unpack all the nuances of what is retro, I'm joined by Sarah Elise Baker, who is also a lecturer in design, culture and context at Victoria University in Wellington. Welcome, Sarah.
Good afternoon.
Good to have you on the show. So let's begin. Your interest in all things retro, where does this stem from?
It was mainly an observation of the interior of my family, actually. So I was living in London and working in art galleries. And I went to my grandparents' house. And when I walked in the door, I realised that suddenly their taste had become desirable. And that I was one of the people that wanted to consume their taste and wanted to have some of it in my home.
And what were the things that were desirable that you picked out?
There's one object in particular which you mentioned actually, which were flying ducks. And my grandparents had had them. They received them as a wedding present in the 1950s, and they'd been on their wall since that time. And for me, the flying ducks were really interesting because they had been associated with bad taste quite strongly, and then relatively recently become desirable. So that was one of the objects that really inspired me to write about retro and to research the style and what it means in terms of the domestic interior.
So you've done the research on retro itself. As I said before, it is quite a broad concept, but what then is retro? How do you define it in the first place?
I think for me and the definition of retro is one of the chapters in the book, actually. So it takes quite a long time to unpack the concept. For me, one of the key... retro can include different types or different other categories. So it can include mid-century, modern or vintage or reproduction. And part of the impetus for me to use the term retro was that I was able to explore the differences between reproduction objects and original objects.
So it allows us to have that conversation between, as you say, things that are original or vintage or mid-century or reproduction. So a conversation then about authenticity. Is that what it allows you to do?
Yes, definitely. And I think it allows me as a researcher to explore actually what authenticity or originality means and what objects are seen as original or reproduction. So that's a one reason for using the term retro.
Okay. And when does a certain object then become valued for its retro-ness? How does that actually start to happen?
Well, and this is another issue that I explore in the book. I really see the definition of retro as a way of giving an object value. And there are a number of stakeholders that are involved in that process. So retailers, I would argue, are involved in that process. So in the UK, for instance, before I left to come to New Zealand, 80s black ash furniture was becoming fashionable. And retailers were involved in the process of making it valuable. So once an object, a black ash table, for instance, becomes shown in a fashionable retailer's front window or their shop window, then that gives that object status and makes it valuable.
Okay, because the black ash furniture, as you say, for quite a period of time there, you could see it throughout the 80s and the 90s, and then it became something of derision, wasn't it? So it's not until it's in that shop or in the magazine that it suddenly becomes viable, I suppose. Is that right?
Yes, definitely. And the media play a huge part in that process too. And so do we as consumers. So especially people who are seen as cool or avant-garde, so artists, for instance, if they consume objects, then they're likely to become more desirable too.
So we should hang on to our 80s black ash furniture if we have something in our attic or something like that.
Yes, I think so. Or at least you ship it to the UK, maybe.
What about the passing of time, Sarah? How does the way that we value these items shift along with generational change? So say, for example, mid-century furniture now is very popular. Prior to that, it might have been Art Deco, although that's still popular, of course, today. How does that shift with time?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. And I think retro, it, at least in my study, included the periods from Art Deco to the late 70s. In terms of generation, what was interesting is none of the people I interviewed were interested in periods in which they've been alive. And so I think there's a certain element of retro which is about a fantasy of what life was like rather than the reality.
That's really interesting. So, for example, you met some enthusiasts who, and an enthusiast is a really good word for it as well, that not only did they have retro in their home, but they lived retro, but it was from before they were born. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. There were one couple in particular who had a particularly extreme interest in Art Deco and 1940s interiors. And they're a wonderful couple, actually, but their whole life was dedicated to that period. So when I would go to their house to speak to them and look at their interiors, they never used to put their central heating on. And it was in December in the UK. It was snowing, so it was freezing in their home. So they were so passionate about living in that way and passionate to an authentic expression of that period.
Goodness, so you were cold.
Yes, very cold.
On By Design, I'm speaking with author of the book called Retro Style and also a lecturer in design culture in Wellington, Sarah Elise Baker. Just back to these enthusiasts in that cold house as well. So they had all the trappings of that time period. But what place then, therefore, did modern technology play in their home?
It was really interesting. All of the enthusiasts that I spoke to had some complex negotiations and decisions to make around new technologies. And most of them had a room or a space that was dedicated to holding those new technologies. So quite a few of them had a computer room or a TV watching room. People with less space would create retro-looking facades for new technologies. So they weren't on display in the home, but they still had those technologies in the home.
The items, though, that are on display, when you do have an object that is desirable that you could consider to be vintage or retro as well, these are things that actually take pride of place. They become statement objects as well, whether it's a jukebox or a cocktail cabinet or something like that. Why are they important?
I think, and it's really true, that the statement pieces were apparent in everyone's homes that I interviewed. And I think for me, they're part of the reason they're statement pieces is because things like cocktail cabinets and dressing tables have disappeared really from contemporary homes. And so it makes those objects obvious. So when I went into their house, I noticed the cocktail cabinet and the dressing table. But also, for me, I think it was that those objects encourage practices that take more time. So, for instance, if you have a dressing table, you might sit down and put your makeup on in a leisurely way and dry your hair and those sorts of practices. And the same with making a drink from a cocktail cabinet, is that it can take more time than, I don't know, grabbing a can of beer from the fridge.
So they have the effect of relaxing you at the same time as being beautiful objects in your home.
Yeah, I think so. And that was a real... All of the people I interviewed saw it, or I interpreted it as a critical comment, really, on what contemporary life is like. So lots of people spoke about the time pressures that they felt at work and also at home, and how those objects could create space for a bit of relaxation in the kind of frenziness or the frenzy of contemporary life.
And as you say, rooms that don't have the television or the computer inside it, they're just there for the pieces, I suppose. You talked about your grandmother's ducks at the beginning of our interview, and tell me a bit then about the difference between the collectible, the item, and then something that actually has a nostalgic value to it, you know, inherited versus collecting.
I think that's an interesting question. I suppose the inherited objects that people had inherited objects in their homes as well as those that they acquired. And I think the inherited objects often had more emotional connections or connections in terms of memory. And quite often some of the inherited items had started their interest in the period. So someone might have inherited, say, a 1950s tea set, and then that really inspired them then to look at other 1950s objects because they liked it and they liked the memories that were associated with it. So quite often that was a starting point, actually.
So where are the ducks now? Sarah?
My grandma broke one of them when she was cleaning in the mid-90s and then got rid of them.
Oh,
but
no.
I do have some ducks.
Talking about retro, though, which is exactly what our conversation is today here on By Design, can you take it too far? Can you be too much of a collector? Can it be too kitsch, I suppose?
Well, lots of my enthusiasts would say so. I think the thing that really came through as well when visiting their homes and chatting to everyone was that retro really isn't about clutter. All the people that I spoke to like to display their objects with lots of space around them. They often had sessions clearing out objects and then acquiring new ones. And I think lots of their homes, I observed that their homes could be likened to gallery spaces. So actually, the enthusiasts that I spoke to would say, yes, it can definitely go too far, and that's when your house is full of stuff that you can't see and you can't enjoy.
Okay, so it's 2013. I do actually have a storage unit with some things in there that I've inherited. What should I keep and what should I get rid of? If we're talking about the fine line between clutter and hoarding.
What a difficult decision. I mean, I think for me it depends, and I would always say the things that you love and the things that you enjoy, maybe the ones that have more meaning to you and the ones that have more memories attached to them. In terms of value, in terms of market value, it's difficult to say. I mean, anything, of course, as with all design, anything that has a famous maker or artist or designer attached to it is probably likely to be valuable.
What about the things that we often forget that you might not consider, like wallpaper?
Yeah.
or a mobile phone from the late 90s?
Yeah, I think those objects, people often ask me about what's going to be valuable in the future, and quite often it's things like the odd roll of wallpaper that you have left over. Also, new technologies become retro much quicker than other items like tables or chairs. So at the moment there's a kind of trend in cassette players and early record decks becoming very desirable. So that, I guess, the new technologies would also be something to think
to
about.
Think about, certainly. Hopefully they still work too, which
yes.
would be ideal. Sarah Elsie Baker, thank you so much for joining me and chatting with us here on By Design. And your book is called Retro Style, Class, Gender and Design in the Home. Thanks for joining us on the program.
Thank you.
And if you have retro items in your home, maybe that one piece, maybe it's your fridge or some wallpaper or something like that, I would absolutely love to see some of your pictures. You can post your items, your retro things, on our Facebook page. But yes, Sarah Elsie Baker there, author of Retro Style. You can find some more links to her on our website.